Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
For 44 years, Radio Pulpit has been a voice of hope, faith and love in homes across South Africa. This August, as we celebrate our birthday, we want to share that same hope with those who need it most. There are precious children in our communities who lack even the most basic essentials. Our birthday wish? To bless them with love in the form of school stationery, toiletries and other essentials. We invite you to be part of this beautiful act of giving. Drop off your donations at our offices in Kilner Park, Pretoria. If you're not sure what to bring, visit radiopulpit.co.za for the full wish lists. These heartfelt gifts will be given to the children at homes such as Jacaranda, Louis Borta, and Marista. Let's make our 44th birthday a celebration they'll never forget, because every child deserves to feel loved. Radio Pulpit, 44 years of hope, sharing it forward.
You're on 657 AM. Radio with the truth in his voice.
And that's where you are at, on Radio Pulpit, your daily companion on Heart to Heart. It is exactly 15 minutes, just after 2. And we gave you the sounds of JC Zwe, just around the corner. Wallahi Mamelodi, umfana wasekasi, nobody like him. So my family, the Electoral Commission of South Africa, IEC, has been vital in promoting democracy by conducting free and fair elections since 1997. Can you believe that? And as it marks its 28th anniversary this year, they celebrate its journey, and we all should be celebrating this journey together with them of electoral integrity and reflect on the representation of women in government and leadership in the country. Since 1994, South Africa has made progress in gender equality, but women's representation in parliament has been declining. And out of the 400 members of the National Assembly elected in 2024, only 43.5% of elected representatives are women, which was a decline from 46% in 2019. In a democracy that includes all voices stand strong, women have stood tall and proud in their democratic journey, currently accounting for 55% of registered voters, 58% of voters in elections. However, only 32% of mayoral positions are held by women in municipal workforces. So women occupied only 39% of senior level positions, with many municipalities failing or falling short of the 50% target set in the Women's Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill. Factors like limited mobility, safety concerns, and social cultural constraints affect women's participation, especially from rural areas. And today we are joined by the IEC to unpack these issues for the next 30 minutes. And my family members are invited, you are invited to stay tuned and engage with the IEC. And today I am honored at this current moment in time to be talking to Ntate Tlhogi Mosue. How are you doing, sir?
Good afternoon. I am doing very well. And how are you?
I'm blessed of the Lord. Welcome, welcome, welcome. What a milestone,
thank you,
hey? What a milestone.
Indeed.
28 years. Wow. Wow. Yeah, take us through, because wow. It seems like yesterday when the first votes were happening and we heard about the IEC. Oh, there's something like that. And then we learned more about the IEC and the duties of the IEC as well. So 28 years since the establishment of the IEC?
28 years, and it certainly is something both remarkable, but also something that really makes us proud to understand and know that in such a short space of time as a country, what we've been able to do institutionally and otherwise. But since its establishment, the IEC has safeguarded South Africa's democracy for that number of years. And in that, we're talking about an ensuring of free, fair, credible elections, protection of citizens' rights to vote, and building public trust in electoral processes, which has consistently strengthened the foundation of our constitutional democracy. So not only are we looking at those 28 years, but we're looking at them to say that this is the progress that's been made.
So you mentioned that for 28 years, you've been strengthening the foundations of our constitutional democracy, right? Now, how does the IEC achieve this?
So ultimately, in our process and our desire and our function of upholding democracy, we have operated with core fundamental values: transparency, impartiality, accountability, responsiveness, and integrity. These have been what have undergirded our operational systems, our approach to everything, and this has guaranteed that every eligible citizen can register to vote, can stand as a candidate, can actually vote. And it is through that value system, it is through the upholding of that system that has earned us second place worldwide for electoral integrity in the 2024 Global Electoral Integrity Report. So not only have we been junior in terms of our existence as a democracy and even as an institution, but in that space and in that time, we've been able to actively improve, and the scene in something such as this to show that clearly our value system is functional and it is working.
So, Ntate Mosiwe, please share with us what is the mandate of the IEC, Gantle?
So, ultimately, the mandate of the IEC is multifold. Outside of ensuring free, fair, and credible elections, we also have the duty of mandating, of managing, rather, the voters' role and the role and register of political parties, promoting voter education, electoral research, electoral operational research, reviewing electoral laws and recommending reforms, supporting technology development in elections and the administration of political funds, and engaging stakeholders to strengthen democracy. So it doesn't just speak to getting to a ballot box and casting your vote, but it is everything in between, because this is a process that is exactly that. It's a process. It's not just a once-off thing, but a continuous process day in and day out.
And how do you promote voter education?
So the commission fundamentally does this on the basis of the fact that a number of people often perceive that, we only pop up every 5 years.
Of course, right?
Exactly. But ultimately, what we have is the commission uses multiple platforms: schools, universities, community events, mass community events, digital media, and disability-focused programs to promote inclusive voter education. So this is something that is done both locally, regionally, provincially, and even nationally. And so these are the programs that are initiated, such as your school democracy week, your tertiary institution campaigns. All of these are done to show, one, our level of reach and inclusivity, but also to promote inclusive voter education. I mean, just for purposes of that, we've seen the impact thereof as well, seen through the election satisfaction survey that's been done through the Human Sciences Research Council, that shows that 52% of our voters found IEC voter education very useful, and another 28% found it somewhat useful. So it goes to show that the multiplicity and our reach to the various sectors has been able to garner some good results in terms of how people are able to relate to not just the process, but the messaging around the process as well.
Yeah, I'm sure we all want to know, since the 1990s, how has the IEC measured the impact of your voter education?
So ultimately, what we have done and what we are grateful for is that since the actual 1990s, we have been in collaboration with the Human Sciences Research Council to generate research on insights for operational planning as well as outreach. And so when we had the last set of elections, they conducted a survey on actual election day where field workers were randomly selected, and they selected 50 voters, rather, at random across 300 stations nationwide for interviews to ensure fair representation. And so as a result thereof, this voter election satisfaction survey, where people were asked about the election process, including the fairness thereof, is something that really then found us being able to garner the results and the responses thereof, which were very favorable. And so in doing so, we, you know, have checks and balances of our own in the greater scheme of things to be able to ensure that, okay, we're not just putting something out, but we're putting something out that is real good, and hopefully it is being received in that same light.
So a family member is asking, can we trust that our votes are not rigged? The elections are really free and fair. And it's funny that we're talking with the IEC right now, and there was something even about rigging in the previous hour. So can we trust that in Ntate Mosuwe?
Undoubtedly, without a shadow of a doubt, we can be able to trust that our elections are free and fair. Remember, one, the role of the IEC as a Chapter 9 institution, much like many other Chapter 9 institutions, is to protect, it is to uplift, and it is to safeguard the very principles of our constitutional democracy. So this is just based on our existence from a constitutional perspective. But beyond that, what we also then have is the essence of understanding how we actively go about the process of casting votes, the process of securitization of votes, as well as the counting process, which undergoes a rigorous, albeit what some might consider a little laborious, but it's very necessary. We train our electoral staff to understand the full process, and they do this in the presence of party agents, who are also another safeguard to ensure that any and all processes that take place in the voting station are actually, you know, above board and free and fair. So in that essence of things, when you consider the process, the training that takes place, the actualization of the process, and then finally the other mechanisms of safeguarding, you can rest assured that the process around elections, the counting, the voting, is indeed free and fair. And just to add it, we have a physical count, and then we still have, once the results are clocked in, we then still have a auditing that takes place that verifies the count. So needless to say, there's a double check, there's a triple check, there's a quadruple check, there's a check after check after check after check.
Okay, so let's turn our focus to the role of women in democracy in our country.
So the role of women in democracy in our country is one that is one, especially in the context of Women's Month, is a reminder that democracy gains its strength not only through the act of voting, but through the full participation of all citizens, especially women, you know, especially those whose voices were foundational in the struggle for freedom. When you consider the iconic 1956 march to the Union buildings to today, honoring that legacy means ensuring that women are not just represented, but are truly empowered in shaping the democratic future. Now, what does that look like just from a participatory perspective? Of 40 million eligible South Africans that are eligible to register, 27 million were registered to vote. Only over 13 million participated in those elections. Did you know that 55% of that 27 million that were registered to vote is made up of women? 58% of those that actually voted in the 2024 elections were women. So it goes to show that the role of women within strengthening our democracy, one, starts through inclusion, but is already seen, because ideally, just from those numbers alone, they would be able to turn the entire trajectory of the country, just women alone, based on the numbers presented.
But now, in the current dispensation, what specific role do women play in politics and leadership?
So the role that women play, and if we shift it from a participatory perspective to a perspective that we see now in terms of in actual formal structures, we've come to see that there has been an increase of women in terms of affirmation and participation in leadership roles in political and governmental structures. If we look at our National Assembly, for example, as far as our National Assembly is concerned, the head of the National Legislature, the Speaker of Parliament, is a woman. The Deputy Speaker is also a woman. The same goes for the National Council of Provinces. If we look at a number of metropolitan municipal councils and municipal councils, as well as provincial legislatures, we see that the heads of those in the forms of speakers, the role has been turned to being women. We have seen a slight increase over the years of participation and representation of women in terms of the representation within parliament, within party benches. Women are in some instances, some are chief whips, some are heads of committees and occupying senior roles. So we have seen then this progression of women in trying to actively make our society reflect what you know, what is on paper, in which women are the majority. And so we are seeing a gradual shift and increase to see that take place in political and political parties, institutions and governmental systems as well.
Okay, but now you mentioned that women make up like 55% of the registered voters. So why is it that women make up that 55% of the registered voters, but their representation in parliament is only 43%?
So ultimately, and this is a very interesting question, and this is one that I often really simplify by saying, the answer to that is because the system is working as it is. Now, when we look at and contextualize the essence of democracy, its growth, its role, there has been, and you look at any democratic society that existed pre, you know, full participation of its citizenry. If you look back at ancient Greece, those that were allowed to vote were men. Then it became men who own land and men who come from this certain lineage and certain lineage. And it's only as democracies have developed where women have actively been able to participate in democratic systems. So what does that tell us? Because the system is ultimately a system that historically was created by men and was created with patriarchal undertones. We then find the system working as it is. It's not a system that has been overhauled, but is ultimately a system that has just simply created space for inclusion. But that inclusion has not changed the foundational aspect. And so that's why you then find that whilst women are in the majority, because it was men who created the system, because it was men who founded the system, they've been able then to still keep the control while still being in the minority.
Okay, then. So how do we, or how can we overcome these barriers as a nation?
Well, ultimately, this is where we're at. So we have foundational laws that enable participation, right? Our Constitution, Section 9, guarantees equality. Section 19 ensures political rights for all, including women. We've got supporting legislation. We've got global and regional commitments. And so we can already see that there is a legal framework. Now, South Africa, unlike Rwanda, does not necessarily have a constitutionally mandated quota to say that parliament or legislature or city council must be made up of 51% of women or anything of the sort. But we have the framework that is there. And so ultimately, whilst we see this, what is needed is to ensure that in the spaces that we have, participation and representation is then modeled in such a way that it is based on these frameworks, because it is, one can say that it is not enough to simply just say that, oh, okay, well, the Constitution allows for it. Yes, the Constitution allows for it, but there must be an intentional implementation of it that looks organic, that looks intentional and purposeful, that will then allow for the organization and organizations in question to be able to do what is required of them.
And how does the IEC promote women's representation in parliament and leadership?
So ultimately, we don't necessarily have a direct role in that representation. However, as we see, and for us, high female voter registration and turnout shows that women are actively exercising their democratic rights. And so similarly, so what we are able to do is continue to reach out in the best way possible to make women in this context, but make all citizens aware of the ability and capacity that they have to participate in the process. And participation is not just from registering, it's not just from voting, but it is also from actively being able to say, you can stand as a candidate, allowing you to stand as long as you meet the technical criteria that we have for everybody, but you're able to stand, and should you be able to stand, you will then get the necessary recognition.
How do you then measure the impact of interventions on this particular issue?
Ultimately, the measure of impact as far as interventions are concerned is really just based on the capacity and the ability of people to show up. But not only to show up, but to show up in such a way that they understand that democracy is not a once-off thing. It is not a let's go to the ballot every 5 years and let's wait for 5 years to show a change. It is through the constant engagement, through public discussion, through community discussion and interaction. It is through attending of public meetings. It is through not only registering to vote and actually voting, but also doing the same and encouraging others to be able to do that. In doing so, we then know, we then understand that in the entire process that we are trying to achieve, that then we know that people are actively taking things into their own hands, because democracy is that. It's not an event, but it is a process, and that is the measurement to know that we got our voter turnout above 60, to ensure that people are actively engaging their public officials. Then we know that democracy's wheels are in motion, and that is how we measure that impact.
But are there specific laws aimed at promoting women's inclusion in leadership position within the country?
So ultimately, we have the Constitution, as alluded to. Then we have legislation such as PEPUDA, the Act of 2000, which bans gender-based discrimination. We have the Gender Commission Act of Gender Equality Act of 96, which ensures oversight, and the Electoral Act of 1998, which enables parties to apply gender quotas. Now, the Electoral Act, if we look at that more specifically, because it does, of course, deal with the work that we do as the Commission, it enables parties to apply gender quotas. However, due to the fact that, as I said, it's the framework exists, but there is not a full-fledged enforcement thereof, we cannot find ourselves in a system, or we don't have a system that says, okay, this party, because you did not apply gender parity because the essence of application of the quota is solely up to them. But ultimately, we see this with some institutions, the near parity in representation across national and provincial institutions underscores that positive impact of the legal mandates and the policies of some parties. So some have it in their rules, others have it in their lists. And so we see that, but we also see institutional efforts from other institutions such as the Local Government Association's Women's Commission and civic organizations that also then promote this. So whilst we have the framework, there isn't necessarily a mandate that ultimately says through and through this is what it must be, but at least we have the framework that allows for this to be promoted.
Okay, then, but in the context of gender parity in the country, Would you say that these pieces of legislation is being effectively implemented?
When we consider, as alluded earlier, the history of democracy and the history of the country and how the system works, we can, and of course, as a man saying this, I can understand how it might seem problematic, we can say that there has been progress. But when we consider that we are trying to get society to be as reflective of what it is institutionally as what it is in reality, we can definitely say that there has not necessarily been the active or the most concerted of roles to actively make it what it is or where it should be. And as a result thereof, it creates quite the problem, really, in terms of where we look, in terms of where we ought to be and where we want to be and where we are. But when you consider, once again, the infancy, when you consider the continuous progressional changes that come, considering how everything in a democracy, especially one as young as ours, is a stop and a start, can be happy with the progress that has been made. But certainly there is more that still needs to be done.
And what about monitoring and reporting on gender representation?
Monitoring and reporting of gender representation. Now, that is, of course, something that, like I say, the Electoral Act is something for the purposes of our functions as IEC. The Electoral Act, of course, allows for that, or it protects and gives and suggests that there's a need for gender parity. Yet, like I say, because the framework is there and we're not necessarily like Rwanda, we find ourselves, it would change things if we had legislation that would say that this must be the case, and in the event or failure to reach this, then you must know and understand that you have failed, and so this is the penalty for that. What can simply just be used as the constant, registration of parties, the attainment of party lists. For us, for example, that is how we're able to monitor. And it's only in, multi-sector stakeholder engagements where we would then be able to fully actively say and then review and, review to say that this is where we're at and this is what we're looking at and these are the shortcomings and these are the strengths. But beyond that, we have, the Commission on Gender Equality that also then serves as a initiative that would drive for that inclusion and the monitoring. We have other civil society organizations such as Gender Links, the Women's Legal Center, and SAWID that empower but also serve as then those other institutions that safeguard and are able to then be able, where our mandate ends, can be able to continue to say this is how we then move in terms of ensuring, monitoring and evaluating matters of gender parity. Beyond that, it's also about the various institutions to actively engage themselves and actively see whatever policies they have as political parties, whether or not they are living up to that. And of course, it's their members and themselves as leadership that are able to fully make, make essence or hold themselves accountable in that regard.
So let's reflect on the role of women in leadership in local government as we wrap up today's interview.
Yeah. So the role of women in local government has grown exponentially.
Okay.
And we see it as we have progressed. We've seen more females becoming speakers of council. We've seen more females heading up municipalities, as we've seen with the fluctuation of changes in leadership, as we've seen in the metropolitan municipalities of Gauteng. We've seen a number of them even take up roles and take up key roles in mayoral municipal executive committees, so that we see that there is now a growing, albeit slow, but there is a growing in terms of how and where women strategically are placed by their political deployment to then actively participate in government. We have seen an increase in the number of female candidates in by-elections, having been candidates for by-elections. We've seen an increase with a number of female councillors and ward councillors actively representing their parties in various spaces. So mm-hmm. we've seen this slow, and I repeat the slow, because of, you know, the progression of, and the infancy of our democracy. We have seen this participation grow, which, in spite of the fact that we don't have legislated national quota, we've seen that the understanding is that representation depends heavily on political will, but we've seen that political will has become somewhat more aware, somewhat more cognizant, and fully understanding of the need to reflect what society looks like. And so, whilst the law exists, there's consistent enforcement and accountability that is weak. Mm-hmm. But we can say that we have definitely seen, with the progression that has been made between elections, even if we don't look at the whole scope of things, with local government elections looking on the horizon, and when we look at the last set of local government elections, we can be able to look at the various differences in terms of leadership, in the terms of the makeup of councils, and we would then be able to see that some progress has been made, albeit slow, it is progress nonetheless, which we welcome as we continue to develop.
Okay, before we say goodbye to you and to give us the last message, a family member, remember earlier on the rigging?
Yes.
So the question now is, why are the votes not making, what? Why are you not making it electronical when it comes to voting? Or instead of hiding the vote, this should be public. Yo. And he continues to say, rigging starts when we are voting. It starts there. It's hidden somehow when we start voting. Then rigging starts there. So, okay, if your response that they must sue.
Well, I have to strongly disagree, and this is why. Mm-hmm. Let me start with the fact that e-voting, or electronic voting, which refers to electronic systems to cast and count votes in elections with the potential to enhance the voting process's efficiency and accessibility, the IEC has begun the process of promoting discussion on e-voting because it offers those advantages. So it is something that is in the discussion pipeline, because to even say is in the space to be implemented would be a would be us pulling the cart in front of the horse, and that's solely for the basis of the fact that it's a long process, especially in this day and age of AI. That's pertaining to that aspect of why we're not electronic just yet. But the discussions have started. But to say that the rigging takes place, now, the electoral process in any election starts mm-hmm. with you being registered. You are then at a voting station. Your ID is scanned, which confirms whether you are eligible to vote at mm-hmm. that specific station. You then find yourself in the voter's roll. You are then given a ballot. Your ballot is only deemed eligible, and it is only deemed worthy if it has the official stamp of the IEC at the back. Once you then cast your vote, the ballot boxes, when voting stations closed, are closed up, and they are sealed up until such a time that counting takes place. Counting takes place in the presence of party agents as well as security personnel. There is a counting, a recounting, a mm-hmm. counting, and a recounting process that takes place. And then what happens at the end of that process is any specific station, once they are done counting, they have the mandate to post the results in the window of the voting station for public consumption. And then from there, the results are then taken to the local office to be processed, audited, and then punched into our system electronically so that it can then, you know, go up onto that big screen that a lot of people see when the TV stations are showing it. But beyond that, once that process is done, all the results, once declared and authorized, are then also made public in terms of, you know, finding access to them on our websites. Mm-hmm. But beyond even that, political parties, should they be or see that there is an issue or there is something that may be deemed as irregular, have then the ability to invoke what is a recounting process if they can show irregularities in counting. So, like I said, there's a check, there's a recheck, there's a check, there's a recheck, there's a recheck of the recheck of the recheck of the recheck. So it's just a long process. Ultimately, though, it is understandable that a number of our people may find themselves disillusioned by the process because of where the country finds itself.
And so your private vote is safe.
Your private vote remains your secret, and it does not change even in the slightest bit.
All right. And the Demosuwe, then, as we are wrapping it up, finally, what is the message that does the IEC have for South Africans as we are preparing ourselves for the municipal elections scheduled for next year?
So ultimately, the message is but one, and it is simple. Your democracy depends on you. You need to stay informed, register to vote, and participate in civic life. There are those who believe in this notion that they don't participate, but civic life participates in your life. And so as we implore many to understand the importance of the dependency of the democracy on them, we encourage them to register online at registertovote.elections.org.za via their local IEC offices, or for any other information, just visit our website, which is www.elections.org.za. But the most important thing in the midst of all of this is to remember that the democracy depends on you, so you must own it.
All righty then. Thank you so much for talking to us and educating us on this. I think we needed to hear, Wabana, because we started talking rigging even before you were here. So thank you
so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
Have a blessed one. And that, my family, is the IEC official, Ntate Tlhogi Mosuwe, talking to us this afternoon about everything. I'm sure you're ready now. You've heard it. Those questions, I hope they've been answered about the rigging and Alice right there. Just remember, my family, that if you'd like to know more about the IEC, for more information about anything pertaining to the elections and IEC, you can visit elections.org.za. It's www.elections.org.za, or you can call the IEC helpline on 0800 11 8000. It's 0800 11 8000. You can also send them a WhatsApp. You can, and just say hi to 060 088 0000, or you can follow at IEC South Africa on social media. So it's at IEC Social South Africa. Oh my, it's at IEC South Africa on socials. Yes, and the WhatsApp number, you send the words hi to 060 088 0000, or call their helpline on 0800 11 8000, or visit elections.org.za. So that is where we ended with our IEC official today. Remember, it said, your democracy, own it. It's your democracy, so you should own it. Family, I'm signing out. You and I are going to meet tomorrow in the morning on Just For You from 9 o'clock up until 11 o'clock. And yes, next up, it's Germany, Johan Els on Something Else. And after Germany, Johan Els, it will be Pastor Ray on Tuesday Live. It is Tuesday, so at 6 o'clock, you will have Pastor Ray on Tuesday Live. I am signing out. May the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, the love of God, and the sweet fellowship of our Lord Holy Spirit rest and abide with you now and forevermore. In Jesus' mighty name, amen and amen. Leaving you with the sounds of Halal Africa featuring Ntokozo Mbambo. Power belongs to you. Love you. Bye-bye.
In today's rush world, there is limited time for yourself. Your cell phone, however, is with you all the time. So why not use it? Visit our Radio Pulpit website with your cell phone and restore your soul. There you can find out more about Radio Pulpit. Download the Bible to your cell phone. Read Word for Today. And you can listen to us online. Just visit www.radiopulpit.co.za. Especially developed for your cell phone. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion.
Do you need prayer? Radio Pulpit, in collaboration with Need Prayer, is ready to stand in prayer with you. Contact us today with your prayer request at 012-334-1222 or WhatsApp us on 067-429-7564. You can also visit us on radiopulpit.co.za for your online prayer request. We will faithfully pray with you.
Radio Pulpit, 657 AM. True, authentic, Christian radio.
You and 657 AM and life. A winning team on the road to eternity.